You're listening to Emails Not Dead, brought to you by Mailgun.
Welcome to Emails Not Dead, the podcast for emo geeks by emo geeks. As we wrap up 2023 and look toward the journey of 2024, it's always dangerous to go at it alone, so we're here to lead you on the way. My name is Eric, and the Frodo to my Sam. Here with me, as always, is JT. JT, how are you, sir?
Hey, doing all right. Thanks. Thanks for that wonderful intro. That was good.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's good to hear. It's good to hear your voice. It's good to see you. I'm sorry this is in a visual format, but to let all the other people out there know that he looks great. So
thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah. As our guests look even better than I do, so you need to introduce them to
you. Yes. Other friends to help us along this journey and deliverability. We have Allison Goody from Braze. She's the compliance and deliverability enablement principal. And how are you doing?
I am wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. Pleasure to be here. Excited to hear that Email's Not Dead, and I would love to dig into that a little bit more.
Yeah, I guess we would.
Yeah, and another friend of the podcast, our deliverability daddy, the Pedro Pascal of deliverability, if you will. Our director of deliverability, Nick Schaefer. Nick, welcome back, sir. How are you?
Thanks also for that wonderful intro. Good to be back on the show with you guys. I'm looking forward to nerding out on all things email again.
Yeah.
See, it would be worth to go to a visual medium just so people could see, you know, would have seen that reaction that Nick gave. You know? His face was priceless at that moment.
Yeah. It's a good shade of pink. Very nice.
Oh, man.
As we look back on 2023 and continue on our journey of deliverability, you know, lots of things have happened. And one of the things that did go down and was released was the state of email deliverability. Kind of wanted to go over that today as we look toward the future and, you know, kind of talk about some of the things in the report, some of the things that might have been surprising to you. And I'm pretty sure Thomas will link that report here in the description. I guess if this were like the Fellowship of the Ring, Thomas would be our Gollum. Or Smeagol.
Wow.
Ouch.
Well, no. I mean, he's our Precious, so I mean, it only makes sense.
Okay, that's a good way to bring it all back around.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
My Precious.
Oh, man. Good stuff. The State of Deliverability Report, right? Like, it's a few years in. I can't remember exactly how many times it's been done, been completed. Second time that it's been done, it's interesting for me to see, like, just the responses, the type of questions that are curated, right? That it's something that we're going out looking for answers, trying to see where people land within the space, within deliverability, within email, what you're doing as a marketer, and, you know, those that are around the marketing area with all the email things in the email space. I'm always very surprised, like, whenever the answers that, you know, your options, your query, your answers, question and answer, right? Question, and you have an answer to select from. Where are you going to put yourself? What category are you going to put yourself in? I know we're going to get into it, and we'll start with a few of the specific questions and everything, but, like, we will definitely say, hey, you know, choose an answer, choose a response. And I always look at those responses and I think nobody's going to answer that they're in that category. And it's always like such a huge percentage that's in that category. And I'm always like, why in the world are you doing this? So we'll get into it. We'll kind of go into specifics. I just wanted to call that out first because I think that's the area that I think we might live in a little bit is those that are on that really crazy part of the spectrum. Like, let's reel those people in. Let's make sure that not everybody listening to this is in that spot. So we'll kind of go with that. Anybody else, like, any overall insights that they want to kind of share as we start kicking off into this thing?
I loved the honesty from a lot of the senders. I feel like many of them were very comfortable admitting things that they did not know. And I think maybe they knew so little that they didn't even know they should be embarrassed about some of those answers. And so, I admire the honesty, but it was very telling just working on the other side of things to see the customers that I work with day to day. Just seeing the lack of kind of understanding they have of some of the fundamentals of deliverability that to people like us are like, you mean you didn't know that? You know, sometimes we get questions like, hey, why did I get so many soft bounces? And it's like, I don't know. Why did you get so many soft bounces? No. You tell me. And so I think this revealed a little bit of what I had been missing before, which is like where exactly senders are coming from. So yeah, I can't wait to get into some more of the specific questions and kind of see where they landed.
What about you, Nick? What did you think?
I mean, in the same vein of what Allison was saying, like, it's great to see the honesty, but sometimes you're just like, oh no. Why? I think the one that stuck out to me, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, after being in the email space for 10 plus years, I would have thought we were at the point where people would stop admitting that they're purchasing email addresses, but here we are, you know.
Hey, it's people legal.
People are still doing it, so it's just one of those things, like, to the points mentioned, it's good to see people just, you know, be honest with their answers, even though they may know that they shouldn't be doing
it. Hopefully they know. Hopefully they have an idea that they should not be doing this. But I mean, answers, the answers are the answers, right? Like, people admitted to a lot of that kind of stuff, a lot of things that they, that we believe, that we know they shouldn't be doing, that they should be in a better spot, but they're not.
They need to listen to the Emails Not Dead podcast.
Yeah, I mean, that's the dream, right?
If only.
We could only say to them, we could only lead you there. It's up to you to continue the journey to actually implement some of the things that we talk about, right?
If we make them thirsty enough, they will drink. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Great power comes great responsibility. Come on.
Oh, man. I was totally thinking that.
Let's get into some of these specifics. I think there's definitely like a lot in here to kind of dig in through. And I just kind of want to, we're not going to go over the full report. We're not going to go, you know, question by question to try to look at some of this stuff. I think there's definitely some themes. To start off with, right, the question that was a fun one to kind of dig into, like the different categories for people, especially when you put in combination with the rest of the responses and the other questions that happen, is the amount of knowledge people think that they have when it comes to deliverability. Because if you look at the categories, there's definitely, you know, somewhat confident, you know, fairly confident, you know, not confident that they know what they're doing with the email sending. The very confident is a very low percentage, and then we get this huge percentage of somewhat confident. And when you look at the rest of the answers, like, that to me is a little worrisome, because there's a lot of strategies. There's definitely going to be some overlap with the people that are saying that they are somewhat confident, so they at least have some confidence that they know what they should be doing, that they understand what's going on with deliverability and how to implement strategies, but yet the strategies they're utilizing and what they're doing as practices is not right. Through the podcast, we get to talk to a lot of people that are in the deliverability space, that we get to talk to a lot of people that are strictly in the marketing space, that are involved within the deliverability world. They're heavily involved in the ways that they're seeking out information. They're looking for the strategies. They're trying to do those things actively. And I get to meet a lot of those people and talk with a lot of those people. But I know there's people that are out there that are probably maybe even listening to this, that are trying to do the right thing, are intending to do the right thing, and are doing some of the wrong things. I don't know if there's anything that you guys have seen, like in your day-to-day. I know we work with a lot of senders that are very clueless when they come in, but I think most of them admit to being very clueless. And yeah, just kind of like seeing, you know, what is it like for everybody? I mean, look at the survey, we see what the survey says, but in experience, like, what are you guys seeing out there?
I tend to see senders who are very confident in what they're doing, and what they're doing is often incorrect in what to me seem like very basic ways. And I think it's because they either work for a large brand or have been doing it for a long time or manage a large program. And maybe they just haven't felt the impacts of what they're doing yet because of these things. They have a very good brand recognition, or, you know, maybe people really do want their emails. They're just having some bad list hygiene and stuff like that. But I hear senders all the time say, like, oh, I've been in email marketing 10 or 15 years, and you need to get us off the SORBS block list. And I'm like, well, if you've been in email 10 or 15 years, you have to know that getting off the SORBS block list is not going to solve all of your deliverability problems, because that's not actually impacting any of the mail that you're sending right now. You're doing something else wrong. I was talking to a sender earlier today who said, I just don't understand why Gmail is blocking us. We're only sending to people who have made a purchase. And I get why, to a marketer, that sounds like so obvious. Of course, these are really interested people, but I think all of us understand that just because someone makes a purchase with you doesn't mean that you obtained their email address in a savory way. Like, did they purchase in person and they gave that address verbally? Did they make a purchase but gave you a wrong address? Are you not verifying these things? And so I think a lot of the intricacies are just lost when people think, like, hey, I'm sending email and I'm not seeing, you know, a huge impact. I'm not seeing that none of it's getting delivered or whatever. And they kind of just lose sight of how those things are working, the connection between like an email address and an inbox, and what happens in between those things, which is crazy to me, because we all have inboxes full of email and sign up for emails all the time. Like, you're never at Dollar General and they're like, what's your email address? And you're like, oh, fake email 123 at Yahoo. You know, like, that happens all the time. And I think senders maybe think like, I'm such a big brand, no one would ever do me like that. But they definitely do.
Oh, yeah. I do big brands wrong all the time.
Yeah, big time. I'm getting 20% off every time if it means I have to create a new Gmail account. I don't care.
Yeah, there you go. Have you signed up for our newsletter? Like, oh, you get an extra 20% off. Yeah, I will now.
Yeah, you know? I love newsletters.
One of the things you said is probably one of my favorite things that people say. And I mean, this is not, I'm not trying to slight anybody. If anybody's listening and has said this before, I get it. I understand. But please hear me when I say the second part, because what people say all the time is, I've been doing this for 10 years. I've been doing the exact same thing for 10 years. Never had a problem before until now. And it's like, okay, cool. Like, email landscape has changed so incredibly much in the last 10 years. You can't keep doing the same thing and see the continued success that you had previously if you're not changing and adapting.
And people have changed in 10 years, right? I mean, like, exactly. I'm not buying the same things I was buying 10 years ago or listening to the same music, obviously, because I'm not changing that. But your JNCOs went out of style and now they're telling me to buy them again. And it's like, oh my God, what's happening? So you can't just do the same thing all the time. I would say that to customers sometimes. We've been doing the same thing for 10 years. And you're like, well, that's a really old list now. So it's probably time to switch it up.
What say you, Nick?
I'm still chuckling inside about the JNCOs comments because that just takes me, it takes me back to whenever I was a kid and I used to see everyone wearing them. I never wore them. But are y'all saying they're now back in style or they're coming back? Is that what I'm hearing?
They should have never left being
You can
style.
Cover your entire yeah, rollerblade in okay. one leg of the pant. So what's not to love?
Yeah, especially down here in South Texas, I feel like the amount of wind tunnel action that happens is so much, like, it's like a breath of fresh air.
It makes you skate faster.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
I think we could all talk about JNCOs a little bit, but the question around, like, kind of the survey results, what I was going to say is kind of something JT was mentioning, like, yeah, I've been in this space for a while now, and yeah, what was true whenever I came in is definitely not necessarily true today, and there's a lot of things that are constantly evolving. There's changes coming down the road right now that people are preparing for. And, you know, those people that are saying they feel like they're somewhat comfortable with deliverability, I think a lot of people fall into that category where, yeah, they knew at one point a good baseline of their knowledge of deliverability. That's changed, unfortunately. I think that's probably where a lot of those people responded to the survey. I bet that's where they fall.
And also, it's like there's a phenomenon with a name and someone's going to listen to this and be like, oh my God, you dummy, it's this phenomenon. But these people who think they're very confident are not, and the people who don't think they're confident are. And so that's how I feel. I've said this is the only job I've ever had where I feel like I know less every day because there's just so much. So every time I think I have something like, you know, a handle on it, then it goes and changes or there's a nuance that I wasn't aware of before. And so I get a little bit nervous around the people who claim they are somewhat or very confident because I think they're probably wrong.
So I'm in the same boat. I don't know the name of that phenomenon. But yeah, you ask people, are you real smart? Did you get this question right? And they're like, yes, 100%. And they're totally wrong. Within that exact same mindset is where I land. Like 100% agree, Allison. Like I'm able to learn things. I'm able to pick up on things. But just being in the space because so many people are talking about it and it's like, man, I had no idea or a way to frame it sometimes is just what it comes into. It's like, hey, I knew that and I knew these pieces kind of coincided, but the way that it's put together is something that I guess sometimes it just requires time. Sometimes just listening to a different point of views or listening to an opinion or things like that. And I think that's the beautiful thing about the email space is that there's so many communities, so many people involved with it that you can kind of go and have those conversations. And it's usually not super guarded in a way that they're not going to talk about it just because they're working for a competitor or things like that. And that to me is the beauty of it. So like learning, being able to learn, having the ability to learn just because of the community that's around you and the community that's around us in email, I think is a really, really nice thing. Eric, do you have any insights?
Like, I think like email is like one of those humbling things. Like you feel like you know everything one day and then the next day you'll be like, oh no, that's completely different. You know, I've been in contact with my fair of aggressively incorrect people.
I mean, you know what? To be fair, sometimes that's a tactic that I use when someone doesn't want to give me an answer is I just go say something totally wrong so that they can be like, haha, wrong. It's actually this RFC and this is the right way to do it. And I'm like, gotcha. Knew that would bring you out.
Oh, I love it.
That's a good tactic. Yeah.
Everybody wants to be right. So if you're comfortable being wrong.
No, I'm wrong 95% of the time. JT will tell you that.
No. Definitely not, man. Definitely not. The second part of your statement, Allison, where do email addresses come from, right? How are you acquiring these email addresses? There's so many different ways of doing it, and there's so many different strategies. There's people doing it in all kinds of different ways. Your specific market, I've worked with a customer before who their whole platform was all catered to dry cleaners. Like, so that's what they did. Dry cleaners, dry cleaning services. So they were the technology behind this stuff, and they were selling like hotcakes. They were selling to all these dry cleaning businesses. I don't necessarily associate dry cleaners with the most amount of technology that there is out there. I mean, there's some tried and true methods for dry cleaning. I think they're using those, utilizing those at a very good rate. But you know, it's not a spot where you're easily going to be able to put a computer in front of somebody and say, hey, opt into our mailing list. I feel most of the time that's a quick pen and pencil. Hey, give us your email address. We'll send you some coupons. And then you end up with a list that, you know, somebody probably typed into a computer, then was transferred to another service to upload it and do stuff like that. So like, and I get that. That's a business model. You're going to have to account for some of that. But then there's the people who are intentionally doing something wrong, like scraping from the internet. Yeah, everybody, oof, collective oof.
Full body cringe.
Yeah.
No. So, there's obviously wrong things. There's obviously wrong ways to do it. I mean, people admit to it though. They still are saying that they're doing it. There's still some people that are out there responding to those kind of things. Great. We know those people. Stop it. Stop what you're doing. Don't do it anymore. That's an easy response. But for everybody else in the middle, if we were in the context of a customer conversation and you find out that they're doing one of these things that like, hey, maybe a little bit on the edge, like, you know, what kind of conversation does that turn into, or how would you frame that conversation?
I mean, I think one thing that I'm trying to tell customers is put yourself in the shoes of someone who would do anything not to get your emails, and think about your signup process and what would that person do? Because if it's easy for that person to give you bad information, you need to stop whatever that is. So if it's like a very obtrusive, you know, module asking for people to give you their email addresses as soon as they access your website and all they want to do is look at pricing, wait, put it in the footer, make it pop up later, wait until they're checking out and ask them then, you know, things like that. I think obviously from a marketer's perspective, it's like, how can I get this email address as quickly as possible? And from the human being process, it's like, oh my God, you're annoying me so much right now and I never want to hear from you again. And so I think balancing those things, like my desires as a marketer and like the human part of it, can be very separate, especially right now, because, you know, we've just had this big Black Friday, Cyber Monday weekend, and I would click through an email that I'm clearly on their list. And as soon as I get to their website, it's like, hey, sign up for our email. And I'm like, yeah, I did. That's me, Allison. I did that already.
Yeah.
And so I don't know the technology behind that or how easy it would be to stop doing that. But I just think if I were a different person, I might be tempted to say, like, test at test.com. Just leave me alone. I'm sick of hearing from you. Like, don't bother me with this. And so I think a lot of the times examining where a sender has gone wrong is like, okay, now treat this as a human being. If you were this human being, why would you report the mail as spam? Why would you unsubscribe? Why would you abandon your cart? And so I honestly don't think that a lot of the issues would be a technical solve, like sign up for blocklist monitoring. It would be something super basic of like, just review your entire signup and marketing process from the perspective of a brand new subscriber and see how much you're bothering them. Like, see how annoying of a process that is. And I feel like that would actually get senders very far. However, it's not that easy of a fix. I get the impression that a lot of senders want you to say, oh my God, just unplug it and plug it back in and you'll be good to go. That mail will just start flowing freely. And it's not that kind of a thing. Nick, I see you shaking your head there.
Yeah.
The one thing that remains constant in like this whole conversation around kind of sign up processes and, you know, just customers or senders building their lists is something that we've been kind of preaching for senders to do for quite some time, and that's confirmed opt-in or double opt-in, whatever you want to call it. We're still talking about it all these years later, but the survey said, what, 52%, I think it was, of senders do not use double opt-in. Like, that needs to change. There's just too many people out there, like these examples that we have just been talking about. I didn't want to give them my real email address. I want to give them a fake email address. Like, that solves it. There you go. Mm-hmm. Problem solved. Just put in some confirmed opt-in into that sign-up process and you're good. It's something that I still think needs, you know, much broader adoption.
Yeah.
I get the pushback of it adds more friction to the user experience, yeah. But the reality is I think most people
your car, like, Oh, no.
Exactly. The reality is that most people expect it this day and age. Like, when's the last time you signed up for a service and didn't expect to, you know, have to confirm your email address?
Immediate positive engagement from the people who do agree. And so I had somebody ask me the other day, this customer wants to know how many subscribers will they lose by doing confirmed opt-in? And I said, zero? They're going to lose zero. You're not losing anybody good who's not confirming. That's not going to happen. And I like to say it's like, you know, complaining about being a bank and saying you started rejecting counterfeit notes and being like, gosh, we have less money. No, you have less counterfeit money. You're not actually losing anything. That's not how that works. And so, yeah, I think some things need good friction. Otherwise, they just all fall apart.
Yeah, that's a perfect point.
I love that point that you just brought up, though, of like good engagement. Like, there's no way better to get like instant positive engagement on a message from you as a sender than a confirmation message.
Click right on it. Oh my God.
So if you're not doing it, like, you're missing out on that engagement, which, you know, we're all trying to get the best deliverability.
I think if senders are on the fence, they can go ahead and find, like, keep those people that did sign up and have not confirmed. Just see what happens. See how engaged they are with you over the long term, because I bet it's going to be none. So you're not losing anything. And if you need to prove that to yourself, then go right ahead.
Can I just say that when I don't get a confirm from an opt-in, I get nervous?
Yeah.
I'm just like,
did I fat finger that? I don't even know how to address.
Yeah. I'm like, oh no, what happened? Is it me? Is it you? Who is it? Like, I'm just saying.
Thomas needs his guitar catalogs through email.
Yeah. That, and like when I sign up for like Postmates or anything, like when I'm trying to get that coupon, or I'm trying to like, you know, get a Stars subscription trial for like 5 days. Like,
hey, again.
Yeah. Stars can't tell between @gmail or @me.com. Let's be honest.
But no, I think you bring up a really good point, Thomas, which you talked about in this report, that this supports a good customer experience to have good deliverability. And I think that's part of it, is like implementing those best practices from start to finish would help you trust that guitar catalog people more. You know, oh, hey, you know what you're doing. You confirmed my address. I know your stuff is going to go out of my inbox in the future. And so I can always hear from you again. And I have already started to build trust with you as an organization. I don't know how much you guys get ads for this, but you know, there's this new store on the scene, Temu. And it's like, everyone's saying, oh, their Temu orders are crap, or they're not coming, or they've just taken their money and never sent anything. And I feel like, you know, starting with a strong and trustworthy email program is a good way to help build some of that good customer experience. I haven't signed up for Temu, but who knows, maybe they don't do a double opt-in and that's where the trouble starts.
Yeah, I don't know if Temu's like Wish 2. Yeah. Like,
just rebranded.
I feel like, yeah.
Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, oh, I was going to say it. I was right there. I was hoping somebody would pick up what I'm putting down. I appreciate that. Along with that, I feel like some folks that, you know, don't do the double opt-in, sometimes they also, well, if you're not going to do that, okay, check your engagement, see what's going on, but they also don't do sunset policies as well. So they just keep like hammering away and at those recipients and wondering why, like, oh, well, now my stuff's going to spam.
And
like,
what's going on? Cut back to what we were talking about earlier, I'm just sending to my customers. Okay, are they your customers from the early 2000s or like recently? Because I just get an email this past weekend from a car dealership from somewhere I have not lived for 8 years. And it's like, yeah, I can see why maybe I would only buy a car every 8 years, but I don't even live in that place anymore. So you would need to do something in the interim to make sure, like, are those people still interested? Do you even still live in the metro Atlanta area? Do you drive still? Mm-hmm. And I think that just, found this old list from a decade ago, and once upon a time, these people bought cars, so let's see how it goes. I definitely did report that as spam because I know I've unsubscribed before, and they just keep, like, flipping the contacts to a new ESP over and over again. Rick Case, you're on notice.
Yeah, call him out.
Oh man, and it's one of those things. I mean, so much of this and the way that we've framed it and kind of like the context of everything, I feel like it wraps up nicely in the whole. Your subscribers are humans too, so you have to treat them as a person, right? And just as you said, Allison, before, you know, how would they feel if they're being treated in the same scenario? And I think so much of that like just falls right in line with that. people have opinions, people have, you know, change of preferences, people do all kinds of things. Some people, you know, assume that, hey, you might send them a marketing email every once in a while, and if you're pestering them every single day, that's a whole different experience. So, like, how are you making it a better human experience? Maybe there is that crazy person that wants something every single day, you know, or maybe even twice a day, which is super uncommon. That's why, you know, you get dinged for that pretty quick. But, you know, what's much more common is a less of a cadence. And how are you doing that? Because I think that falls right in line with sunset policies too, is not just, you know, how long do I keep somebody on my list without engagement, but like how much engagement do they really want? Like how much are they actually paying attention to? You know, somebody like me who's a little bit more, you know, I see the red bubble telling me that, hey, you have a notification. I'm going to go check it. I'm going to click on it. So if you're sending me a lot of email, I'm going to see it and I might not like that. Somebody like Eric who has like a red bubble with like 6,000 unread notifications, maybe even more, I think at this point, we're probably into the five digit numbers. but he might not see it all the time. So it might be, you know, maybe you're trying to target somebody like that, but it's not going to tell you the same story if I'm opening it up constantly and clicking on things constantly, or, you know, doing stuff because I'm checking it all the time compared to Eric, who you might get an unread message for months on end, you know, because he's not doing it, but maybe he does want that email. So how are you looking at it? What is the cadence you're using, and how are you treating those people as the people that they are?
I mean, and on top of that, like, there are brands that I am a big fan of, and I probably do open their email every day, but when they have a sale every day, then that erodes that trust, even if it's a brand that I didn't like. Oh, hey, jeans are 40% off. Get those JNCOs. They're back in. And then tomorrow they're 40% off again. Like, that sense of urgency has totally dissipated because I know you're just, it's like that mattress store that like is called the, like, we're going out of business mattress store. Like, I don't believe you. I don't think that's true. I don't think I need to click over there right now. I think it can be super tough, even when you do have high confidence in your deliverability skills, to be able to correlate like actual user behaviors to what they are thinking and feeling, because yeah, you're a brand that I trust and I open your email every day, but I'm going to start purchasing from you less and less because I feel like you're kind of toying with me and, you know, using some of these tactics that I find shady. And so like too much of a good thing can start to become a bad thing. Which, you know, I think that's one thing about a preference center, which I try to talk to senders about a lot. They're so nervous about the unsubscribe button. They don't want people unsubscribing. And I think if you have that option of like, fine, just let me hear from you a little bit less often. Because when you're guessing as a sender, like, hey, Allison opens every day, so let's hit her twice a day. Like, there's diminishing returns at a certain point.
Yeah, I've had even some folks saying, like, I'm so afraid of the unsubscribe, I'm going to send to them twice a day, so I'm just going to take out the unsubscribe link.
Guess what? That spam button is there every single time, every time. And it's so fun to press. I feel like there was a very high number of senders saying that they don't conduct any list hygiene. I feel like double opt-in and the sunset policy together would take care of those folks right there. I'm not sure what the lack of appeal is. I get that they think one address equals a dollar amount, and that could be true, but it could also be a negative dollar amount if that address gets you blocked because it's one more spam trap that puts you over the line or whatever. What do you think you guys recommend most often for list hygiene for the uninitiated?
Nick?
Just the sunset policies. That's what I always, going back to my time as a technical account manager here, that's what I always recommended. Not only recommended, I kind of pushed it pretty aggressively sometimes because, you know, I have my customers that were looking to get improvement on deliverability, and I know what is going to help get you to that point, and that is higher engagement. So just do some targeting on those engaged users while not sending to those people that haven't opened in a long time. It seems so obvious, but that is what, you know, I would recommend pretty much every time.
Yeah, I feel like senders, they like tend to reach for like, I can just get someone to clean my list for me. And it's like, well, it's not that sort of a thing. So I agree. I think the sunset policy is the more efficient way of doing it. Your list, if you're sending regularly and getting good permission, your list should be clean on a regular basis anyway, and you don't have to go spend that money. So
you should be building your list the correct way too. I know we touched on it briefly, but something that wasn't mentioned here was, you know, protecting your signup forms for those people that do have strictly like e-commerce sites. You know, this doesn't address those people that are going to be writing down email addresses, but like, you got signup forms. I know from the space I work in, some on the anti-abuse side, contact forms get abused very heavily. And there's a lot of stuff that goes through those forms that you do not want. And if you don't have any protection in place there, they're going to just fill up your list. Start there at the beginning if you can as well. Put some kind of protection on that form, whether it's an email validation service just CAPTCHA. Just doing something to protect your forms is something that all brands really need to be doing.
I love a honeypot.
Honeypots work as well.
I feel like it's just low lift and people can see the better, you know, if it's a bot or something like that. I'm sure it's sort of like when you find like a sack of cash on the ground, you're like, ooh, jackpot. People are like, oh, 1,000 signups today. I'm amazing. We must be going viral. Like, well, maybe it's viral, but not the good kind. There's
encapsulating all that too. Like, protecting yourself, like, against those, you know, bot attacks and stuff like that, like, I think is super, super important. I think for me, the way that I've always seen it too is, or one of the things that I've adopted both from Nick is definitely, like, you know, the preaching of the sunset policies and like when to consider removing somebody from your list. But I think it's grown and evolved to a point where you almost have to do it in a way where you're doing that preference page where you're saying like, hey, you know, I know you don't want to hear from me every day. I get that now. You know, how often do you want to be hearing from me? What is the market that, you know, what are the types of emails that you want to get from me? Pairing that up at the very beginning too, like, I know it's a much more technical lift for people to do that. And I know sometimes that also the barrier to entry, right? Like, you want somebody to just give you an email address, say, yes, I want in, and then just start bombarding them with email. But if you can slow that process down just a little bit, right? Do the double opt-in is one part of it. But then also, like, if you can present a preference page immediately after that, like with your double opt-in, like, do that from the beginning to say, hey, do you really want emails from me every day? Do you want emails from me, you know, once a week? Do you, you know, want emails from me once a month? And it makes a big difference. Like, if I could have that option at the very beginning, great. Because I know there are certain brands, I'm not going to call anybody out, but there's certain brands that email me every day and I'm totally fine with it. Other ones, I don't need to hear from you all the time. I really don't. And it's, you know, it's a matter of what I'm willing to buy, what I'm wanting to buy, you know, me as a person and as an individual. So we have to adapt that. We have to, as senders, you have to start giving people choices, because without that choice, like, that's when it becomes really, really dangerous, right? If the only option is for them to unsubscribe or to block you or to complain against you, that's a much, much, much bigger problem.
Yeah, agree. I would like to see senders put some of that stuff in their confirmation email where it's like, hey, thanks for signing up. Click to confirm how often you want to hear from me. Once a week, once a month, something like that. Just so, like, one, I think it establishes such good trust from the beginning. It's like, hey, this is a brand who actually cares how I feel about them and wants to respect my choices. I think that's really nice. Makes me more likely to give them some of my money. And then same, it builds some really good engagement. And I just think it gives them a little bit of insight, because if everyone is choosing the, like, once a month option, maybe just default. Maybe you just know you're not the kind of company that everyone needs to hear from every single day. And that's totally fine. Make it really valuable that once a month that you reach out.
And I know we don't have a ton of time left in kind of where we're going, and we broke this down, I think, a lot, but I think so much of the other survey questions and the way that everything is framed within there, like, leads back to these as part of really, you know, probably the big topics, the hot topics that are on there that will help address some of those other things. Because I know a lot of it is, you know, delivery rate. How often are my emails coming through? Like, are they getting to the right spots? Yes, hopefully they are, right? Like, I mean, we have a lot of people that are saying, like, yes, it's important to them. Open rates are important to them. Click rates are important to them. But I think that, in combination with the stuff that we've been talking about here for a little bit, the opt-in, the option to opt out, like, how they opt out, like, what are we talking about for sunset policies? And then making sure that we're collecting the addresses to begin with in the right way, and not that we're just presenting a double opt-in, but, you know, where are we getting those addresses from? Where are they coming from? And how are we able to make sure that we're doing that part in the right way? I think are very, very key things to focus on. And then the other part of it, which we didn't touch on here, we're actually saving it for a future episode, is the authentication piece. You know, are you signing your emails with DKIM? Like, are you saying where you're sending them from with SPF? And then the new rules that are coming up. So all that we'll tease for a later episode. But I think that coupled is going to just be so helpful for delivery rate, but then deliverability rate more than anything else, because that's our goal, right? Not just send out, but to make sure that it lands in the right spot. So I just kind of wanted to say that as we get ready to wrap up. I don't know if anybody has, like, any thoughts on it or anything else that stood out that we want to maybe cover in a quick way.
I mean, I definitely think it's great that the mailbox providers are kind of forcing some of these things to happen. You know, authentication makes all of us safer and makes email more enjoyable for everyone, which I think is wonderful. Love email. Thanks for my paychecks. But I also think, you know, the more, like, stringent these standards get, the kind of more we circle back to the very basic things, like I've said this before on LinkedIn and stuff, but you know, if we lose open tracking, if we lose click tracking, if we lose all of these things, still the most important thing will be sending email to people who actually want it. So don't guess, mm-hmm. just let them choose, let them, you know, initiate that relationship, let them have full control. Stop hiding your unsubscribe link. Stop trying to make things more difficult, because all those things will only hurt you in the end. And it, you know, when people want to say goodbye, just let them, they can come back anytime. I feel like customers also really struggle with saying goodbye to recipients who are purchasing, but are not opening emails. And I feel like if they're not engaging with emails and they're still purchasing, that's like the best ROI ever. Stop sending to them. Like they're yeah. pure profit. There is no need to keep wasting your time. Yeah. And so I think it really goes back to the being a human and then relying on the best practices of getting permission and sunsetting and making sure that you're confirming and verifying that the addresses are correct. Because once you've got all that authentication and stuff in place, ideally it shouldn't change that much. I mean, I guess if you're changing your DMARC to go from a none to a quarantine or a reject, more to come in future episodes. But aside from that, if everything else is in place, it's just going to go back to the basics of the human on the other end of the transaction and how much they want that email.
Yeah, I will say that with these changes that are coming, all of these bad practices that we've been talking about, you know, we know the best practices, but we know that, you know, senders don't always follow those, and, you know, maybe they've been able to get by. With these changes that are coming, more onus and responsibility is being put on the sender for those authenticated domains. So it's going to be easier for the mailbox providers to track senders on an individual basis. Like, what are their practices? So those best practices are going to, you know, become more and more important with these changes that are coming down the line. So I'm looking forward to some of these changes personally, because I think it's going to force the hand of some senders to clean up some of these things that we've been talking about.
Agree. If they want to get more aggressive, I'm here for it. Job security.
Yeah, there you go.
We definitely have experts for people to talk to, so.
Yeah. We'll definitely drop a link where everybody can find us, you know, if you want to talk more about it. Allison, but you mentioned LinkedIn. We're going to go ahead and we'll wrap it up here for today. Thank you so much for coming out. Really do appreciate your time and speaking with you today. Nick, thank you for coming by as well. But Allison, where, if the people out there in the podcast land want to get in touch with you, find you, listen to more what you got to say about deliverability, where can they find you?
So LinkedIn is probably the best place to find me, Allison Goody. I'm sure my name will be in the show notes or wherever you find your Emails Not Dead literature. I tend to post a weekly meme with an explanation of why it is so funny to me for the new and old deliverability folks. Ideally, I would love to reach out to senders and get them to kind of understand the concepts of these things before they make a mistake. And if it gets some of my friends a laugh in the process, so much the better. But please do follow me. I would love to see you on there.
Right on. And Nick, if somebody wants to reach out to you, where can they contact you at, sir?
Same way. LinkedIn is probably the best. And I am going to say, yes, go follow and connect with Allison, because the memes are hilarious and you owe it to yourself to get a weekly chuckle. But message me on LinkedIn. Tell me you heard the podcast and would love to connect.
Don't right just on. Guess our email addresses.
Yeah. And Thomas, where can they find the information about our show?
Yeah, for sure. You can find us over at mailgun.com/resources/podcast. You can also listen to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Make sure you give us a good review on there as well. And make sure you come by for the next episode, because we've got Marcel Becker coming in from Yahoo coming in next, talking about these big updates. So we're super excited.
Ooh, yeah. Get it. Right on, everybody. Thank you so much for your time, everyone. Thanks for hanging out. Until next time, take care of yourselves.
This has been a Mailgun production, an email delivery service focused on providing better deliverability for developers and businesses alike, with over 150,000 customers. Learn more at mailgun.com.